Welcome to Engineering Influence Podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We are very pleased to be bringing a topic to the show today, which is of great importance to our industry, especially today as data and technology, of course, has taken such a spotlight place, not only in our industry, but the economy as a whole. And the ACEC Research Institute has been looking at the issue of technology adoption and especially how technology is being used by engineering firms, what kind of technology is being used, the level of adoption of those technology platforms, and how it's changing the way that we do business. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we got together at our fall conference in Marco Island, and we had a conversation about this issue. We had one of our keynote speakers, Mitch Joel. He's a marketer. He's a digital marketer, and he was talking about how to reach customers in the post-pandemic environment. And a lot of the conversation centered around technology adoption and how companies and engineering firms can use technology not only to improve their own efficiencies, but to potentially create a differentiation in the marketplace and become more competitive. And we're working right now, and the Research Institute is working right now on producing a technology study. And to discuss kind of this issue from a 10,000-foot level, I am very pleased to be joined by two experts from Bentley Systems. I am joined by Dustin Parkman. He's the Vice President, Mobility Industry Solutions with Bentley Systems. And Lori Hufford, Vice President, Design and Engineering, Enterprise Systems with Bentley Systems. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you, Jeff, for having us.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
You know, I think that it's interesting because Bentley was one of close to a dozen companies that helped lend their expertise to this study and the research team and the development of this overall research project. So really want to thank you guys for providing your own thought leadership on this and your own experience. But, you know, I am kind of interested because I reviewed some of the preliminary information about the study, and I noticed that it really focused on three areas. Engineering collaboration, 3D modeling and BIM automation, and then insight tools. In the process of helping out the Institute, how did you help guide the decision to kind of focus in on those three areas of technology for adoption?
So the reason we chose or helped influence those three topics is that's essentially the challenges and feedback that we've been getting from the marketplace for a few years. So if you take BIM, for example, it's been around for quite a while. It's very mature in its stage, but its adoption and implementation and value is still, there's still a lot of untapped potential there, right? So for example, on that one, you end up with 3D modeling technology, but a lot of the processes and things like that are built around that are still essentially the same as they were before. And then you have insights, which is really kind of really all about kind of tapping the data that's being created and getting more value out of it. So as engineering firms are designing and engineering infrastructure for communities, it's always been kind of a transactional conversation, right? It's a project based, the project is done, you move on to the next project, but there's actually a lot of intelligence there, right? So the idea around insights is being able to tap into that value and potentially offer different markets, different things that value that engineering firms can actually not only have internally, like for predictive analytics and predictive behavior and those types of things, but also more value they can deliver to their customers. And then the last one, which was the engineering collaboration, all these things are kind of tied together, right? In order to be super effective with these types of tools, you need the collaboration backbone to do that. And particularly with the pandemic and a lot of the workforce shortages and workforce distribution that took place, it really kind of shined a light on a lot of the different challenges that engineering firms are having and kind of put it to the test. So I think where a lot of the engineering collaboration software may have only been used by larger engineering firms in the past, even small mid-sized firms really kind of identify that, hey, there's a huge need for this, right? We're no longer in the office, we're distributed. And then if you take that and you compound that with just overall workforce shortages and talent shortages in the industry, that workforce, I mean, that engineering collaboration software can allow companies to kind of tap talent where that talent is, right? Rather than having everybody physically in one location, you can go out and get the best engineers wherever they're located and still have them be super effective for regional and local work.
Lori, I know that your expertise at Bentley, I mean, over 25 years of industry experience in general, both in engineering and then also with the technology side of the house. But I know that you're running the strategic direction for Bentley's engineering collaboration applications. What's your perspective on this kind of technology and how it's being deployed in the AE space?
Yeah, thanks. And you know, I think Dustin did a great job of setting the stage for that. The pandemic has really changed things, and I think everybody is aware of that. The challenges that the engineering community faced even just a couple of years ago are today much different than they were then. And the beauty of engineering collaboration software is that it helps facilitate these diverse design teams spread across the world, multidisciplinary design teams working on the world's most complicated infrastructure projects to do their job more efficiently. And to not have to focus on, how do I collaborate better with my team? It just becomes a natural part of their workflow. And so one of the things that we're really trying to do here at Bentley is establish and further the standard engineering workflows by leveraging next generation technology. So design review, other types of collaboration with regards to transmittals and submittals and that sort of thing, make it just such an easy part of the engineer's work that they can focus on the engineering capabilities that they need in order to design the world's infrastructure.
Yeah, which is it's a challenge, I guess. You have an industry that's been so focused on paper for so long, and has, especially when dealing with public sector clients who have a specific way of doing things. I was talking to one of our vice chairs in our board, John Rathke. He's with Mead and Hunt, and he's working with ASHTO, the organization that kind of represents all the state DOT directors, and in working out a standard for digital project delivery, because it's trying to figure out what is that. This kind of goes to the 3D modeling and BIM side of that equation when we're looking at that technology breakdown, but creating that unified file system that could be used and between public sector clients, no matter where they are, across jurisdiction, and then with consultants on the other end, kind of how do you actually take this digital version of what everybody's been doing on paper and how do I actually create it and make it work? And that seems to be an important part of this puzzle. And I wonder if that kind of has gone to the question of technology adoption by some firms. You know, the very large institutional firms that are multinational, and to the point, Lori and Dustin, that you brought up about how do you coordinate on large infrastructure projects, especially if you have teams in different locations, you know, both national and then across the world. But then, you know, it's the case of how do you do that when you are a smaller firm? How do you accomplish that? What have you seen from your perch at Bentley about how these technologies are being adopted by your smaller or mid-tier firms compared to, you know,
I mean, you bring up a couple of interesting points, Jeff, because contractually, particularly in government sector, so you're talking about DOTs and large municipalities, the standards for what are being delivered are still rooted in that paper-based mentality, right? It may be electronic, but it's for all practical purposes, it's the deliverable is electronic paper. So one of the things that can really drive the smaller firms is those actual agencies changing their contract deliverables. So not only obviously there'll be a period of time where we have to cross the chasm and bridge the gap where there'll be electronic 2D deliverables, but also requiring that 3D deliverable to come along with it as part of that contract. That will kind of be the catalyst that will commoditize this across firms regardless of size. So what we typically see today is the smaller firms are getting very involved in BIM when they are a subcontractor to a larger firm. So if there's a larger prime that has the contract and they're wanting those deliverables for their own internal ROI and better design outcomes, then it's kind of cascades down. But when it's a smaller firm and they're contracted directly by those public entities, the contract doesn't require that. So they typically, you know, don't make the investment because they are a smaller firm. The ROI may not be there. They may not have the enough of the skill set within their organization to actually be able to do it at scale.
Yeah. Lori, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the we're really seeing an exciting time here in terms of this transformation. We are seeing a lot of smaller firms subcontracting to larger firms. And, you know, at the end of the day, whether you're a big, large firm or you're a small firm, you're doing the same type of work, right? You're performing the same type of engineering work. You're just working in a smaller ecosystem in your own organization. But a lot of times you are participating in these large ecosystems. And so the world is becoming a smaller place. The pandemic has resulted in the world becoming a smaller place. And engineering collaboration software is designed to facilitate that transformation. You know, ProjectWise for years has been helping large organizations work across the globe, and extending that out to their to their subcontractors along the way is just ultimately going to result in better infrastructure designs.
So what do you think has been the greatest barrier of entry for this technology? Because one of the things I saw in some of the you know early results from this survey is that it's a question of not only just having the financial ability to take on these technologies, but there's also a mix of the people who has some experience using this. It's that it's just not the buy-in cost, but it's also how do you get the stuff stood up, especially if you're really any firm of any size. I mean, if you don't have a unit internally that can help educate people on this product, then you're not going to be able to maximize your efficiency with it. I mean, what have you seen from your positions on technology adoption? What's the biggest barrier to get the stuff put in place?
So, I mean, there's a lot of different answers to this question, Jeff. There's not a single answer, but I think one of the things that we've seen is it's really about the workforce that's within the company, right? So depending on the appetite for it, there can be age separation. There can be people who've been rooted in doing things a certain way, and there's a resistance to change, like any organization. And then you have cases where engineering firms that are small have completely embraced it, and they've done it for the purpose of competitive advantage and first movers into a particular industry. And the one advantage that I'll say that small firms have that exceeds the larger firms is they have agility on their side. So if they can get the right level of people or the right level of training within their organizations and they make those investments, we're seeing a lot of smaller firms kind of get out in the front on the bleeding edge. Whereas 10 years ago, that was never the case, right? It was always the big, large firms that kind of were the ones kind of pushing the technology. But that's kind of been flipped on its head recently, particularly with cloud technology being available. Many of these technologies, the cost of goods are far lower than they were just a few years ago. So the kind of commoditization of some of these technologies has made it available to everyone. So that's helping a lot. But the biggest barrier has probably been just, you know, making the switch, making the change, making the investments on the human capital investments to have some of the people to kind of champion it within each organization.
Yeah, and doubling down on that, I think, you know, any type of technology enablement, it comes down to people, process, and technology, right? And you have to have all three legs of that stool working in harmony in order to make successful change happen. I think I think the pandemic has almost forced the people and process aspect of things. The technology has been in place for a little while, as Dustin was talking about with cloud technology. There's not as much of a barrier to the implementation anymore. And these types of engineering collaboration technologies are becoming more templatized and that sort of thing, such that there's a starting point for organizations. But it really comes down to people, process, and technology really working in harmony.
That, you know, you both raise a really good point because, I mean, really what we're doing right here, talking like this on the platform that we're talking on 10 years ago, probably wouldn't have been possible just through cost alone. You know, it's kind of funny how, you know, technology in general has been a bit democratized. And Dustin, to your point, the commoditization of the technology has created efficiencies in some ways, reduce cost, but also have, you know, really increased ease of use for a lot of these technologies. So if you're a smaller firm, you don't have the baggage or the bureaucracy, quite honestly, of a larger firm. So it's understandable that the smaller operators would be able to take a look at something with a blank page and say, you know, this is something we want to do and we want to get ahead of, especially as a competitive advantage. Is there one area of these three buckets of technology that, in your view, presents a greater competitive advantage to another, or is it an equal mix?
You want to go, Laura? You want me to go?
Sure. I'll go ahead and start. So I think the world is drowning in data today, right? So when we talked about the three buckets, insights was one of them. The world is drowning in data today, and the leading organizations are making investments in insights and analytics, and it's really an area that if you look at the amount of data that we have, that's one thing, and we're just drowning in it. And I think what we're seeing from our leading organizations is those that are making investments in forward thinking, analytics, and insights, and really trying to drive their business from a data driven perspective and leverage all the data that's being collected, not just from, Dustin mentioned earlier, an organization, collaboration software has been a transactional. It facilitates easier transactions. The next step for that is to take that data that has been captured in the transactions and using AI or ML or even rudimentary dashboards to gain insights and use it in progressing project delivery within an organization.
Yeah, I mean, I think the amount of data that's going to be created, you know, every couple of years is exponentially going to double and triple. So we're not seeing any stop to this, right? So I think you touched on a point a minute ago about what AASHTO was doing with some standardized deliverables, and I think that's good. But the reality is there's going to be more data artifacts being created at a faster pace than you can standardize on them. So unstructured data, I think, is just something that's real and that we're going to have to deal with as an industry. I don't think you can conform it, which is a good thing. But we do need to understand it, right? So being able to take all these different types of data and artifacts and be able to use that as intellectual property for an organization is really the key, right? And that's how you're going to get the exponential benefits from efficiencies, from cost execution, from competitiveness. It's very early days, I will say that, right? So we have not crossed the chasm on it. I think we're still in that kind of discovery, early adopter area in that regard. But I think there's so much potential there on the insights and analytics, because there is a tremendous amount of very, very rich information that is being created by these engineering firms. But again, it's been project by project, And transactional rather than seen as kind of intellectual property that can be used to create more value.
Yeah, you know, I'll go back to a couple years ago at FITIC, our international group in Mexico City. There was a their annual meeting, and they had a keynote speaker, one of the guys who. I think he was one of the leaders of the Silicon Valley Revolution way back, and he was made the point early on and just said to this group of international engineering executives, they said, you don't know it now, but you're a technology company. You might not think you are, but you're a tech company. And this was exactly the point. It's that so much information is being produced. And like you said, it's growing exponentially. And to Lori's point, I mean, it is just this, it is how do you use the data? How do you own the data and what you do with it and how you sort through it, which is going to really make you more competitive in the marketplace. Also create new opportunities where you may be doing work that you never thought you did before. But once you get a hand on all this data and especially what you're creating, it could actually create opportunities for new business opportunities, new business segments that you didn't think you were going to get involved in beforehand. So those unknown, it's the intangibles of all this technology that really creates a lot of exciting possibility for the industry, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the I want to double down on something that Dustin said. Rather than looking at your data at an individual project level, being able to take a look at it at a portfolio level and aggregate the information, extract insights at an aggregated level that then allow you to feed back to individual projects. To help each project stand better on its own because it's leveraging the insights from past projects. And what it really takes, though, is making sure that you can look at things at a portfolio level, then looking at it across an organizational level. But you have to lay that foundation of the data structures in order to be able to capture the types of opportunities that you were talking about, Jeff, right? You have to structure your data. You have to employ the right tools and the right mindset. Again, coming back to people, process, and technology, you have to have the right mindset about it to be open for those ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I think engineering companies as a technology provider is a very interesting concept. And we've been seeing a lot of this already, where I think I think particularly companies are engineering companies are identifying they have a lot of the data, they have a lot of technology. They certainly like the evaluations that technology companies get from a value perspective, as opposed to a consulting valuation. So you are starting to see some of those types of trends, like, oh, okay, we like those multipliers. So yes, we would like to be considered a technology company. So I think that's kind of been driving some trends. And so I think, you know, if you look at a lot of the forward type of predictions, and I'm not going to go on a soapbox about metaverse or any of that type of stuff, but there's a lot of this Web 3.0 technology that's coming out. You've got blockchain, you've got metaverse and all these different things. And they seem a bit more out on the edge with gaming and stuff like that. But those things could be real for technology providers, where you think about like the content, right? It's the content that makes a lot of these things valuable. And what do engineering companies do? They create a lot of content, right? A lot of engineering artifacts. So I think, you know, engineering companies as a technology provider, I think you're going to see a lot more of that. And we're already seeing elements of it now.
So let's kind of wrap up with one final question from your perspectives, Lori and Dustin. You know, what do you hope to get out of this study when it's all said and done? What would you think engineering firm leaders should do with this research once they have it in hand?
So I think I guess what we would expect is to see a lot more, particularly midsize and smaller engineering firms taking the plunge. We're already seeing a lot of elements of that already, right? But as you use the word democratize, we would expect to see it democratized over the next few years, right? Particularly in the U.S., where you've got an infrastructure bill that's going to put more constraints on an already constrained workforce. You're going to see some of the contractual limitations and barriers that haven't really kind of pushed engineering firms to make that jump. You're going to see that happen. So that kind of puts going to put your hands on the scale a little bit. And so I think that will help a lot as well. And I think they just need to know that a lot of the technology, I mean, two of the three topics that we talked about, right, they're not new. They've been here for a very, very long time. It's just, it hasn't made its way down to every firm. So I think that's, you know, something that can happen really fast.
Lori, how about you?
Yeah, I'd really like to thank the ACEC Research Institute for the work that they did. I think this kind of research is extremely valuable for the industry as a whole. To have this type of independent view of things, I think that engineering firms will find it valuable to compare themselves to their peers. I think every firm is always wanting to know, well, what's going on in the industry, and having an organization like ACEC put a report and perform the type of research that they did here allows an organization to benchmark themselves and see, what technology opportunities am I missing? You know, what in my strategy do I need to look at to make my firm more competitive, regardless of the size of the firm? We've talked a lot about small and mid-sized companies and some of the advantages that they have. Allowing them to have access to a report like this and know that the technology is available to them to be able to compete more efficiently, just like some of the larger firms have been doing in an easy manner, I think it's just invaluable.
Well, you know, this is exactly the kind of research that the Institute is was designed to produce. It's that leading edge business centric research that allows executives at firms to act. It's that it's you know, while the large firms, our large member firms, of course, have people on staff that generally look ahead, and they have, CIOs who are heavily invested in new technologies, that's not the case for every firm. And they might not have a strategic consultant on software. They might not have a technology person. And having this kind of research really does help them level the playing field with their bigger competitors. So, you know, we do appreciate those remarks, and we look forward to this research being released and getting it into the hands of our members. So, Lori and Dustin, I do appreciate the time you've taken out today to talk to us about this and your expertise at Bentley. I mean, you're a leader in the AE software space, so getting your thoughts here is really valuable.
Thank you, Jeff, for having us.
Thanks for the time.
And again, this has been Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. We will see you next time.